Neske.
Kathy Schwantes.
Vicki Davis.
Dave Ramstead.
Shelby.
North Central Tribune.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm putting my phone down.
John.
We're just doing a roll.
Roll call.
Yes, here. Her.
John Herron.
John Herron.
Kevin Marty. All right, thank you. I saw that. So. Thank you for being here. Public comment, there is no one here to speak to us. Number three, the draft policies for the Renaissance Zone. Dave?
Thank you, Chair, Council, committee members. What you have is a pretty extensive packet that is the incentives that make up what we're calling tentatively the Renaissance Zone, which is the map you have before you. And what the Renaissance Zone is an overlay, an incentive overlay zone that is right on top of the Opportunity Zone, except for the one area to the west that reaches out to encompass the area around the WMU plant. The idea is, one, to make this area as enticing to development as we possibly can make it. The other is, if the IRS's Opportunity Zone were to ever be discontinued, we can still continue this zone on our own. Also, the zone is the Opportunity Zone is only for capital gains tax incentives. So if you have capital gains in the stock market, you can put it into a fund. In turn, the fund can be used to develop properties, projects. And that really limits participants to really the very wealthy. What this does is it opens it up to local, state, and national developers, so everybody in Willmar can participate in this in these development opportunities. Staff will be seeking a committee approval to begin vetting the process to solicit feedback from key stakeholders inside and outside City Hall, so that we may further refine the package, develop the ordinances with the City Attorney, Robert Scott, and then return to committee with a CAR for either further feedback and revisions or to progress to City Hall, to City Council. Since there is a significant amount of information in this packet tonight, staff respectfully requests that any specific and detailed feedback be provided after our meeting, preferably through email or redlining the copies that you have, and providing whatever suggestions you may like. All suggestions, edits, deletions are welcome. And in that way, staff can make the most of the revisions and provide accurate and detailed responses as necessary. Tonight we have, for the incentives, we have the tax abatement incentive. We have free permits incentive, which includes building permits, sewer access charges, water access charges, and signage. We have a Renaissance Zone free city-owned land incentive. We have a heritage designation incentive, and this is for properties that are culturally or architecturally significant to Willmar that we would like to see preserved and not torn down. We have a matching forgivable loan for facade renovations. We have a removal of the holiday and weekend parking restrictions in the zone. We have the opening of, or the more liberal issuance of bar licenses. We have looked further into that, and Sarah can touch base on that. And we have the Renaissance Zone open zoning, which is, in effect, we want to open this up to all proposals that would be reviewed perhaps by this committee and planning and zoning to determine their fitness to go for application to building permit. These incentives all together could actually be combined all together into one project if they click off the requirements for each of them. All together, they add up to a significant amount. The abatements, we don't require, we're not required to have county approval on them. They're strictly in our hands, up to 15 years. You go beyond 15 years, and then you have to get the other taxing districts' approval. The abatements are scheduled. You'll see on page 6 of the Renaissance Overlay Abatement Policy, you'll see that there's a schedule based on square footage. And then we've also introduced some tentative minimum project thresholds, which are based on total square footage, number of stories. It excludes single-family housing. It's only for commercial projects, multifamily housing, retail, businesses, you know, office space. It also excludes the current land value and the current building values, if there are any. And it requires a minimum renovation investment of 50%. So these are really just preliminary things. We've been developing them further with, some other zoning that Sarah's been working on. I'm just going to quickly kind of go through these real fast. The free permit incentive is also in your packet, which is the next one. And it just talks about, you know, what these incentives are. And then the second page talks about some of the cost-benefit analysis that we did for Councilmember Meske's request. And we figure just a couple of projects, and it would pay off. It would reimburse the city. To put it into perspective, out of the $550,000 in permit fees that we received last year, only $19,000 was in the zone. Very small amount. The next one is free city-owned land. Again, this would have project thresholds that they would need to meet in order to get the land for free. But there are a number of parcels around the business district and the rest of the Opportunity Renaissance Zone. Heritage preservation. This is authority that's granted by the state to the local jurisdictions. Again, on the map that I've given you, you will see some dark gray properties. And the planner, Sarah Swedberg, and myself drove up and down the streets and personally designated these buildings. They're by no means written in stone. We can always remove or add anything that's on that map. But the dark buildings, especially you'll see in that red square, which we're kind of calling the historic or the heritage designated business district. There's not that many, but those are the ones that we felt were the most. It includes like the movie theater, the old bank building where the shootout happened with the bank robbers, the insurance building, and a number of others. And then the light gray ones that are kind of scattered across the Renaissance Zone are what we would consider to be architecturally significant homes. And that is not so much to save them, but to give people the opportunity to buy them for next to nothing or for nothing. We want to have a 90-day moratorium where the owners that want to tear down that block or do some major development, that they offer those homes up so they can be moved for 90 days. And if there's no takers, then they'd be free to remove them. And you'll see that one of them is the home on First Avenue, right across the street from the Legacy development. Now, a number of these places are on the state and national historic register too. So this would only apply to the ones that aren't. I mean, obviously they're going to have. There's other restrictions that we've noted in here that they would have to comply with. So the 90-day thing would not apply to one that is also on the state or national register. This would be a voluntary, just want to make sure that you understand, this would be a voluntary, if the owner does not want to be on the heritage program, we would not put their building on there. And if they do want to be on there would be incentives for them to renovate and to restore their building. So that's part of the perks. It also does not just include buildings, it includes uses. So for instance, Frida's, we would mark that use as a heritage designation. So that if developers came along and wanted to tear down that whole block, Frida's could protest and say, no, we don't want to leave here. and it gives them some strength to negotiate. Now, again, that's not written in stone either. It's just one of our ideas because it's a longstanding landmark diner. So, okay, the facade incentive. This would actually be a loan, a forgivable matching loan that the city of Willmar would offer to a limited number of property owners in the zone every year. And it would be like a lottery. So you would have to provide bank proof that you have funds in hand and fill out the application, which is attached to this document. Your name would be pulled, and you would get it. And every year, 20% of the loan would be forgiven up to 5 years. You'd have to own that building for 5 years in order to get 100% forgiven. And we think this is a great opportunity for getting a number of the storefronts renovated. This would probably only apply to the heritage designated properties, I'm thinking. But doesn't necessarily have to. It apply to all.
So is it a first come first serve or a lottery?
Well, we're kind of here first come first serve. Right. You're gonna see some kind of things that are kind of, you know, if you know, can be either way. It says that it's that way, but it could be a lottery. It could be first come first serve. So it's really, a lot of these things are placemakers that we've just put in here for the time, but all this stuff is very fluid right now. I mean, this is hot off the press, so it took a considerable amount of time to get this far. But yeah, you're right, it could be first come, first serve. Let's see. This one is the business district. And this one is, oh, this is the parking. So this last one is the existing ordinance that removes the parking restriction on holidays and weekends, which a lot of communities do that, even big cities like New York City. The entire Manhattan has no parking restrictions on Saturday and Sunday, which is, when I lived there, was awesome, because you just drove your car down the parkway. I'm going to let Sarah talk about this overlay district that we've been working on. I've also printed off the tax abatement rules that our jurisdiction has authority over, and it just gives you a real quick overview of what our level of authority is, and it really explains what it is. So these would be economic development tax abatements, and like I said, we have authority to do them to the fullest extent in this abatement plan. The abatement plan is modeled after the city of Moorhead's Renaissance Zone and abatement plan. I originally worked in North Dakota for Valley City, and we had a Renaissance Zone in our town in North Dakota. It's actually a North Dakota thing, the Renaissance Zone, and Moorhead replicated it and created a Renaissance Zone. We actually didn't discover that this overlay until after we created ours, but we have adopted the name. We think it's a great name for our downtown area. They've had great success. They also have a opportunity zone there, but their success has primarily been, well, has entirely been with the Renaissance Zone. So there's just, you know, you need so much money to take advantage of the federal opportunity zone. Finally, also in response to some of Councilmember Meske's comments, we have created an outline on the map that designates the Heritage Business District, which would come with architectural standards, very very broad ones. We don't want to get into the woods on them, at least not now. But what it would do is it would say that no building could be taller than, like, let's say 3 or 4 stories. It would have to be contextually sensitive, and then maybe that's it. And then they come in and present it, and the committee and the planning commission make that determination. That way we're not saying, you know, it needs arches, it needs to have columns, it needs, you know, we're not getting into the woods on the components. That's fine. I just want to offer the opposite view. I'd still like to have it wide open. And there's an area in northeast Minneapolis, which is just across the river from downtown Minneapolis. And it's been called Nehe, northeast and Hennepin. And it's an area that is a neighborhood downtown. And for years and years, it was really depressed, very vacant. And over the last 20 or 30 years, it's slowly been revived and developed. And they don't have architectural restrictions. So you can see, like here, I don't know if any of you are familiar with the Third Avenue Bridge that comes over into, it's also called Central Avenue. But there's a Lunds on the corner here. There's some housing developments. The Lunds is a one-story building with a couple of towers on top of it. And then they've sandwiched the parking ramp in between, so you don't really, you don't see the parking ramp on the street. I've taken some street shots to kind of show the different heights of the buildings. Then I've done some close-ups of what development. You can kind of see here on this one, there's a couple of older historic buildings that have been restored, and then the new buildings are next to it. And I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's very creative and a lot of vitality to the area. Now here's another one where they've done a one-story, but this is a fully new, torn-down block. This is the sort of thing that, now, a lot of people like this. I personally don't. But this is the sort of thing that where it is trying to, this is in the same neighborhood, it's trying to be historically, you know, fitting in. But it comes across to me as being kind of fake. And that's the one thing I would try to avoid. It doesn't have any joy to me. So I just offer this as a counterpoint to what you were saying earlier.
What was it you were saying?
We were talking about in the historical zone of having conformity to what it was like and paying homage to what it was before and maintaining that piece as you bring in other elements. Probably similar to this. That, and so we if we were in the same neighborhood, I would actually have thought this was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You probably figured that already.
It's a very popular building.
Yep, exactly. And you can see it's right over here. And so I can envision that very much happening where you have in that red zone this, and then right on the periphery of it,
the
things that
the high-end,
so you and I can walk down these main streets and look on opposite sides of the road and smile. Because I think there's actually room for both of those kind of concepts with this idea. So,
all right,
thank you.
So I'm going to hand it off to Sarah to discuss the zoning components. Can I do one last thing? Because I actually forgot. I went right over the top of it, and looking at John, it reminds me. We've had a couple of meetings with John and regarding the WMU plant, and it is part of the heritage designation. And we originally were thinking, like, maybe putting it on there as a one-year tentative, but we bumped that up to 2 years because there needs to be a number of studies done on the property. Namely phase one, phase two, cost analysis, to really determine whether the commission, the utility commission and the city council really have the appetite to go for it, because it's probably going to be millions of dollars to make it turnkey. But in the meantime, we wanted to put it on the map, put an asterisk on it with a little note on the bottom saying that it is tentatively available so that any anyone that wants to court WMU on the property can, and it's but in the meantime they are going to be proceeding and working towards doing their phase one and phase two. And I don't know if you want to, and you're also thinking about maybe offering some incentives in addition to the ones we're doing. Did you want to
come on up?
All right, thank you. Yep, come on, I'll turn it over to you shortly. Yeah, as Dave indicated, reached out to us, and we looked at it, the area was expanded. Interesting concept. I think, you know, there's a lot of merit to it. It's like everything else, attention's in the details, you know, to get the details where they need to be. With that, we had the opportunity to flip through the draft copies of the different incentives that are being considered, and we shared comments and suggestions back to the city, to Dave, on where we're at and some of the things that we need to be aware of, and the city, Dave, needs to be aware of to make this work. So with that, maybe Kevin, if you want to touch on some of the high-level things on the time frame that it's going to take for us to move our equipment out of there and complete the phase one and two.
Yeah, the big thing, like Dave alluded to, is the environmental studies. When we saw the Renaissance overlay and then included all of the utility property, there's a lot of moving parts there that we originally, when the decision was made to discontinue the plant in June 30th, the decision or the budgeting and planning for to do something with the plant was out for quite a few years yet. Just because of the size of the project and the equipment that's still in the plant that we need to retain and plan on moving out. So when this popped up, we thought we better get involved at least let our side of the story know so everybody knows what's involved there. The big things, like Dave mentioned, is that we plan to bring to the move forward with phase one and phase two environmental studies and what those will do, and then also inventory the building itself to get an idea. Number one, the studies will tell us, you know, if we have issues underground with the property, if we have to dig halfway to China or not to clean it up, what can be done with the property. It'll inventory the interior of the building, how much asbestos and mercury and other things that need abatement, so we can get some accurate pricing, because pricing that we've gotten to clean up the property is obviously widely ranging without the right information. So those are the first key pieces to finding out the plant and the surrounding property itself, what we can do with it. The other piece is that the plant itself is the original starting point for, there's a half a dozen electric feeders that come out of that building. And the switch gear and the controls, the SCADA controls for pretty much the entire town are still housed inside that plant. The plan is that when we move to a new building in the future year, that we would move the SCADA controls and all those sorts of things that are more administrative into that new building. The functional things, the switches, the feeders, there's a small substation just right kitty corner on the back side of our office that has a transformer in it that's scheduled for replacement in the next 8-10 years. Those big pieces we would move to the north of the substation that's halfway between the office and the service center property. The plan would be to put up a building there to house that switch gear and all those controls, and move the feeders from their location, because they right now they go underneath the street from the plant to the basement of the office. There's a wire tray room in there, and then they go out into town. And they would all have to be moved from, more than likely from their first, because we don't like to splice feeders. You lose the electricity, and most of that's copper, so they would have to be identified their first junction switch or junction or whatever those are. It could be thousands of feet, and that wire cable is going to have to be replaced back to the new location of that switch building. So when we start looking at those projects, and as we work through identifying how big that project is going to be, there's a good chunk of this property that the utility is going to need to retain, and we don't know what that is yet, but we are moving kind of a little bit faster track than we planned because of this project, and I think this is great and has phenomenal merit for downtown and the area. But we'll be bringing that stuff to the planning committee very shortly here. Within the next couple weeks, we hope to have at least get going on the studies, and our engineering side of the utilities is working on, you know, looking at how do we move things and starting to get some preliminary things, so we can identify that, so we can you know, that's why we asked the 1 year to be bumped out to 2 years so we can identify, you know, what we need. At the end of that 2 years, hopefully we'd have a good idea of what we need to retain and when we'll be out of what's left.
So is there state and federal funds to help with the cleanup, or haven't gotten into that?
That's possible, and that's, I think, something we talked about on Friday, is that we maybe work with the city
and EDC. And yep.
Look for that kind of stuff. Yep.
So that white area that's unavailable, that's where you would put that new switch building?
Part of that, yep, the south, that it doesn't show there that Pacific Avenue is vacated in between there.
Is that where the water towers were, or the
That's where the cooling? Water tower was, kind of kitty corner to where the cooling tower is in that block.
Okay.
So north of, on the north side, just south of the tracks on 7th Street is the old coal yard. And then the next block over is where we'd put that switch building.
Okay.
And that's just north of that substation. Yep.
And the dark blue, that's your garage? And
that's our service center, yep.
Yeah.
And we'll need to retain that, so we talked about changing the colors on that.
Okay.
We'll need to retain that until we are moved to a new
facility. Right, we haven't done that yet. We have the map in the back. We're going to do that after we get some feedback from the committee and others.
We have, obviously, the office building property that we'll need to stay in for a while, and part of that maybe, as part of that is that underground cable project and feeder project. And then the four parcels that were the old Taco John's and the Jerry's Liquor properties. So, and those parcels obviously would be the most available.
If it's not premature, would you be able to discuss what kind of incentives you're thinking about to add to the, or did you want to wait on that?
No, we can throw out there at staff level, we're proposing to, we'll be proposing to the commission to waive 50% of the application fees for those projects. But after looking at the proposal that they prepared from the city at 100%, we'd entertain that to our discussion. Well, just to keep things simple and uniform between, you know, city and utility and the application, so that when people look at it, we don't have to have disclaimers that, you know, city is here with discounts and utility is here. So as soon as we can have a planning committee meeting or have one set up here, we'll be discussing that. And to address your questions a little further, you know, is there funds available for some of this cleanup? I think we'll be able to better answer that question once we have phase one and phase two completed. Because then at phase one, phase two, it'll identify, as Kevin said, you know, what do we got? Do we have, we know we got a lot of asbestos. Do we have mercury in there? Do we have lead in there? Do we have PVCs in there yet? You know, all that stuff. Do we have intrusive gases coming through the floor? As Kevin said, do we got to get underneath the building to clean up? If that's the case, it might be in everybody's best interest to take the building down. So it's phase.
Or it could be designated as a brownfield or a Superfund site, and then yeah. you would get significant funds.
Yeah. So once we have phase one, phase two, we'll probably be working with Dave, Sarah, and Aaron, and you know, what kind of grants are out there for the challenges that we have ahead of us. However, with that said, to kind of summarize, the commission did indicate with the opportunities that the city is discussing as, you know, could generate potential interest in that property, that there's somebody, I'll use Dave's terms, that comes courting us for that building. They said they would be definitely open to moving up and expediting our new facilities for us to get in there to take advantage of that opportunity if somebody comes forward. Yeah, that's a major piece to us relocating those, that infrastructure that's in there. So
great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions for us?
Wait and see.
Yeah, wait and see.
All right.
All right.
Thank you. Sarah will talk about the zoning. I appreciate that, John.
Okay.
Thank you.
You want us to stick around longer while you talk about zoning? Otherwise,
if you like, absolutely.
Okay.
So an overview, I think zoning is really where you know, when the pen hit the paper as to what sort of things we want to be encouraging. And zoning is really how we're going to kind of make that happen. So as we've kind of talked about objectives of creating this district, creating this overlay district, we talked about that when we first proposed this kind of 10,000 foot overview idea. Just within this Renaissance Zone, we've got eight different zoning districts. And so how do you wrangle that all in and take what the variety between all of those different things and think about transitioning some of that and really transforming this district as we've talked about, but also wanting to think about, you know, what are the kind of, how will the dominoes fall if you do that, and how do we protect ourselves against kind of swinging the pendulum the other way and seeing disinvestment in existing buildings while also encouraging development of property that to create these 500 or 1,000 additional dwelling units downtown. So that's some of the context behind some of these thoughts and ideas. You know, encouraging that adaptive reuse of heritage designated and existing infrastructure, thinking about how we can allow more flexibility within these districts and different things, really encouraging creativity of developers, thinking about the context that they have and some creative solutions to new developments that they're proposing, really pushing for that pedestrian scale streetscape, thinking about walkability and promotion of kind of street activity, while also encouraging that density so that we can actually fit all of those dwelling units downtown and in this area that we are pushing for. Really promoting this zone as an entertainment district so that it complements the mall area, the First Street area, all of our other business district things, and ultimately to create a healthy, equitable, and resilient community. So looking at opening up allowable uses, elimination of dwelling unit restrictions in residential areas. Again, always that caveat that properties and developers have to take in that consideration of creativity and context where they might be proposing those things. So thinking about parking, thinking about mixed rental and ownership opportunities, thinking about proximity to green space and play space that they're allowing on their sites, or proximity to parks that we might have. Thinking about maybe some mixed use, so some retail or some office space near or within those buildings, encouraging, again, context and creativity, encouraging entertainment uses like restaurants, specialty retail, arts and culture experiences, those sort of things. With parking right now, we require a lot of on-site parking, except for in the Central Business District, which we don't require any parking for those, any new use downtown. So we would allow up to a 50% parking credit, which would help significantly with not just having parking C's, if you will, but encouraging below-grade parking, camouflage parking, whether it's kind of in between, in the middle of blocks between buildings, or heavily landscaped, or something with a building-like facade. We know from the parking study done in 2012, which is nearing 10 years old now, that there are definitely times of the day downtown where parking is about maxed out. So we need to take that into consideration, especially if we're really trying to build in that density. So that needs to be a provision, while also not wanting to create this waste of space, if you will, of just on grade parking with a couple hundred spots in there. So encouraging some of that camouflage parking, suitable number of public parking spaces, if retail or office or commercial uses are included, thinking about multimodal transportation, so thinking about providing for bicycle parking, electric car charging, shared car amenities, those sort of things. Working with CCT to talk about, you know, where are there stops within this area? Do we need to increase that number, to, you know, every so often if so many square feet of building or use is built? Thinking about those sort of.
Can I touch base on one of those?
Yep.
So one thing that's happening a lot, like in urban areas where they're trying to reduce the number of cars, is a lot of the property owners are offering what's called zip cars, and they have a car that's or two in the garage that the tenants can sign out. It's an amenity to living there, so they don't have to have a car. So it really helps to reduce you know, the number of cars you have in urban areas where there's just already too much congestion.
Thinking about landscaping, we want to see areas that are pedestrian-oriented with amenities such as seating or fountains, planting sculptures, those kind of things. In those setback areas, we don't want to see, again, we don't want to see parking. Allowing up to 6 stories. Right now, we allow up to 4. With keeping in mind, we've built in some of those incentive projects, we've required 3 stories for certain incentives. And then also taking into consideration that heritage designation area. So allowing more around that 2 or 3 story height, kind of depending on the context of the building.
As a minimum.
Yeah. Setbacks, 0 lot line setbacks, which is what is in the Central Business District currently. For context, I gave you, there's quite a lot of different scenarios of where setbacks might be required, with an allowable 25 or 50% setback for every story above 3 and 5, respectively. Again, those setbacks we want to see landscaped versus used for parking spaces. So having them parking in the back. And then there's been a lot of research going on with the Preservation Green Lab, National Trust for Historic Preservation, about adaptive reuse, which is kind of this new wave, well, relatively new wave of zoning and ways to think about how do we reuse these buildings that already exist, because of a sustainability standpoint, because of this historic preservation standpoint. And one big thing that they talked about, they came out with a big study just a year or two ago, that I've been diving into quite a lot. They talk about the importance of eliminating or reducing non-conforming status, both from a lending standpoint and also just from an encouragement of wanting to see those buildings stay versus them becoming kind of this eyesore in the middle of this transformation. So really encouraging, not wanting to see. We in Wilmer, we have a huge asset that we really don't have a lot of vacant buildings, which is huge, and we don't want to find ourselves creating that situation where we're seeing more vacancies because everyone wants to move into the new buildings. So,
there you go. That's awesome. Thank you, Sarah. Sarah put in a lot of extraordinary time in the last few days to get this together because we've been spending so much time on these other parts. So thank you very much. Just to put a big umbrella over this that goes along with the map is our objective is to juxtapose downtown from First Street. So First Street's this retail, mall, shopping, retail area. We would like to reimagine or transform downtown to be more of an urban entertainment district so that it is not competing, it is complementing First Street. And our goal is, just for the sake of having a goal, is 1,000 housing units. Right now there's about 100 down there, not very many at all. So a large portion of the mass of these buildings will be housing. Part of that you'll see in the abatement packet. One of the requirements we put in there that you should note is we put a 5% affordable requirement that at least 5% or at least one would have to be at 60% AMI, and that would have to be a covenant tied to the land. So they have to designate a unit, and that would be in the perpetuity. It doesn't have to be, but we put it in there as a to see what the level of acceptance on that idea is. And there's obviously the other architectural covenants that we put in there about the minimum story height, square footages, and things like that. So, John mentioned, the real test of this thing is in the details, and a lot of these details are first draft. We have a lot of place markers in here that might appear to be contradictory, or one thing might say this and another and that. So please bear in mind that this really is a first pass, and we would love to have those things pointed out to us, and have any feedback from the committee that you wish to give us, again through email, or if you just want to mark these things up with a red pen with notes and whatever else, you can bring it back and give it to Sarah, myself, or to Lynn. That's fine too. What we're looking for tonight is approval to really begin speaking about this more publicly in broad terms, and with the caveat that these are staff proposals. They are not policy that are adopted yet. But like I've got an appointment with the radio on Thursday. I'll be going on there quarterly. I would like to talk about this on the radio. We would like to vet it with the directors in City Hall. We'd like to vet it with the chamber. We'd like to further vet it with Aaron and his team at the EDC, and perhaps the board members. Maybe it might include some of the big developers like Marcus or Kelly over at Tuisha. So we're kind of generating a list of folks that we'd like to vet this with, and so we'd like to have permission to do that too. And then once we've taken all this feedback, we would like to take another editorial pass and come back to committee with either further feedback and edits or for permission to move it to City Council.
So you're not ready for the mayor to have a task force?
Oh, no.
Okay. So you want 1,000 residential units?
Over the next 15 years.
15.
Right.
That's now, aggressive.
Yes. And we also I didn't say that this is a 5-year pilot program. At least that's what's being proposed. It can be any term you'd like. But the idea is that after the term is up, the committee and council can disband it, revise it, expand it, do whatever is necessary. So at least you have these intervals where you can evaluate the program and determine whether or not it's worthwhile to continue.
So the housing units, that's for couples, singles, or families, or everything?
We would leave that to the developers, but it'll probably be a combination of studios, 1, 2s, and 3s. It's just the only restriction we have, at least not a restriction, but the only requirement we have in order to receive an abatement right now is that at least 1 or 5%, whichever is greater, is an affordable unit. So at 60% AMI, area median income, which actually is not that restrictive, but. And if you take it into consideration that whenever performas are established on the multifamily housing developments, they usually have a 5 to 10% vacancy rate built into their performa. So, and this is an occupied unit that just has a reduced rent, so it should not impact the bottom line.
I'm just thinking, the community. Personally,
yeah.
I don't like to see school buses go downtown, park in the. Stop in the middle of the street and have kids get on and you have to wait 5 minutes. You know, we have enough of that on Fifth Street and other areas.
Yeah, there's definitely...
We are in a big metro area. We're population of 20,000, so...
Right.
I don't know.
I think the downtown could become an urban neighborhood. It may not ever get to 6 stories. It may be a number of 3-story buildings. It'll be up to the developers to propose. But, you know, we've got probably around 30, 40,000 people in the region, the Wilmer region. And I think it would be an attractive thing. Now, school buses go down busy streets in other cities, sure.
Yeah.
So it does happen.
No, I could see senior citizens are working.
Sure.
But I want to live downtown.
Yep. Yeah, and that'd be a great mosaic, is to have seniors, all types of folks downtown, just populating the streets and the businesses, and patronizing the businesses.
Any other questions, Sean?
Well, no, I'm going to make a motion here, but it's about, this is good, this is about time. There's been a lot of competing ideas of what should be downtown, and there's never been a synergy to pull it together and come up with a unifying vision. And this, I think, is doing that. I like hearing that you're talking about it complementing First Street District. It could be something unique. It's been sorely missed. I don't know if this is the correct mixture, and we'll explore that. I'm hoping this provides incentives. I would I would want to hear from the stakeholders of, does this eliminate some barricades and barriers that we have seen in the past for development downtown? Because I don't know the answer to that. But I like the concept of, and I think a shared vision of what that could look like is sorely missing. And so I thank you for starting to put this, the muscles on the skeleton here, if you would. And so if you're just looking for a motion to, I would move to approve the Renaissance Zone Initiative overlay for beginning a vetting process from key stakeholders inside and outside of City Hall.
Second.
Other discussion? So you can talk about it on Thursday at the radio station.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All those in favor, Sarah?
Oh, I will just say to Sean's point, a lot of what they talk about in this adaptive reuse piece two is a huge portion of it is taken up for city permits and fees and all of that kind of stuff. So it certainly hits all of those check boxes.
Well, and I want to, and I would add, one of the key points, and I'm glad you pointed the page out right away, this isn't just simply new construction, this is renovation as well. Because a lot of folks always say, oh, it's these businesses that are new are getting a leg up on those that have established themselves. And I think this is a nice balance of both of those things. And that's another piece I don't know if we really...
To use a cliche, raise. It's casting a wide net.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Aaron?
Yeah, Aaron, could you please speak to some of the buzz that you have experienced in just mentioning this to... some people, right. In relation to what they seem to be excited about.
Right, and I was just going to start out by saying that I'm really glad that the Wilmer Municipal Utilities is also interested in participating in it. I am certainly a believer of reuse of both lots and buildings, and every single location that I've worked at in my career, that's been a priority for me. So when I was in Jamestown, for instance, Jamestown, North Dakota, we had a state hospital that had downsized a lot, and over half the campus was vacant. And I ended up supporting, and they approved eventually, after testifying in the legislature, a medium security prison. And maybe that's not the top of the agenda that we want, hastening to add, but I look at it like, hey, this is an investment that collectively everybody has made. And the cost to do that prison was $35 million as opposed to $80 to $100 million in a brand new setting. When I was in other locations like Wyndham, for instance, we had a school that had been, a wing of it had been empty for years. It had been built in the 1960s, and we were able to reuse that after renovation for an early childhood Head Start program. That's good, because typically when you're talking about buildings such as yours, they're surrounded by utilities, roads, water, sewer that everybody has invested in. So I think we have a responsibility, fiduciary responsibility, and hopefully a vision where we can reuse facilities that are downtown. I'll make a shameless plug here, but we've been working on a prospectus for the Wilmer Opportunity Zone that includes the area that we're talking about right now. And I'll just pass this around. This refers to the Opportunity Zone, and I'm glad that you're including it in the Renaissance Overlay District here, your area. It won't be easy, but it's important that you're doing the Phase 1, Phase 2. That will shed some light on the challenges. But it may be possible to get a contaminated site TIF district, or it may be possible to get brownfield assistance from the state of Minnesota if you show the need and you show the opportunity to redevelop it. When I was up in Grafton, for example, Walsh County in northeast North Dakota, we had a development center that was downsizing, and we ended up redeveloping it, three of the buildings for housing. That was sparked by getting a grant from the Office of the Governor to look at reuse. adaptive reuse. It's not easy. There were obviously challenges along the way because it's got to be ADA accessible and all sorts of stuff. But there was a need. We have a continuing need for housing. It's tight. I just looked at a housing report that came out last week. And Wilmer is at 2.5 months of inventory. That's historically low for us. We're not alone. There's other communities such as Marshall and Worthington that are in the same boat.
Yeah, I think vacancy is about 1%.
Right. It's tight. We do have people that are interested. I do happen to think that they're within the opportunity zone. I think the first things out of the chute are probably going to be commercial. There's interest on the part of people to invest in areas that haven't seen investment in a long time. So, but there's also interest on housing, and all the parties have got to come together. Last week I had a meeting with 8 people that were interested in potentially a housing project. We'll see where that goes. And also end of last week I met with an individual that's looking at commercial projects. So we'll see what happens. But what Sarah and Dave have put together, I think, makes sense. It's attractive. It's getting people's attention. If there are permit fees that are waived, if there is an abatement program, that can make the numbers work for some projects. And if we can have that happen here over the next couple of years, I think that will encourage not only development, tax base, but jobs that we need.
Can you talk about some of the buzz and the excitement and what, like, for instance, on the permit and snack and whack fees?
Right.
How there seemed to be a more excitement in that direction.
Yeah. And of course, invariably, you're going to have some people saying, well, I didn't get it for my project. But I think that if you take the picture or the look at it, like, okay, this has to be based on performance. That if you're going to invest $130 per square foot or $175 per square foot for renovation or new construction, that will spur interest and activity. If we can have a 10,000 square foot project that's going to be a new building, that's $1.75 million. That's going to generate taxes for the city. And it was interesting. In the meeting that I had last Wednesday, when I started bringing up some of the things that we are looking at, one of the people said, are you writing that down? It was nice. It was nice to hear that. A couple of people were from out of town, Mankato and elsewhere, and they were pleased with what they heard.
And it's almost counterintuitive, but the little incentives are actually excite people, I think, the most. You know, the free permits, which really doesn't cost the city that much. The sack and whack, whatever. people love those little gimmies. The abatement, obviously, is the biggest. And that's why we have some of the biggest requirements in order to meet the threshold to get that. But
do you have any pulse on the appetite at the county and school district level for the abatement?
No. But yeah. we have control over the abatement up to 15 years.
Yeah.
So
locally.
Yeah, locally. Yeah.
Any other questions? Yeah, you got a motion on the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. See what happens.
Thank you very much. We will keep developing, and I will copy you on the vetting emails. And so that on our questions, everybody will be able to see what the questions are and what the answers are, or if any. Thank you.
Dave, you can look at pictures of downtown New Ulm and or Red Wing
to see some of those marriages of it all with all.
Ouch.
We're not done yet.
We're back.
That's right.
So the department has, the primary thrust has been this Renaissance Zone and Opportunity Zone. I am going on the radio on Thursday and we're going to start doing that quarterly. Because the department, doing it every other week or whatever is just a bit much. The department just doesn't have, you know, we're sort of, you know, grassroots creation and then bring it to them before we have stuff. I did submit an update to the city administrator on the department's achievements over the past year. It's a pretty impressive list, if I say so myself. We did about $63 million in construction this past year, about $550,000 in permit fees, $20,000 just in the zone, which is a very small amount. Sarah did some great firsts with Artists on Main Street, first annual Artists on Main Street, Touch a Truck, and a couple of other great cultural activities. We're also, we purchased a patch through Logis. That's a nonprofit software company we use for our building official administration. Now they have a patch for our rental program. So we'll no longer have to use Slate and Chisels for our rental program. We're going to have everything in the computer. So we're very, very excited about that. We're scanning all of our documents into LaserFiche, which these systems will be able to access. So slowly but surely, we are automating our department. And the final piece of the puzzle is Sarah and I have been evaluating planner software so that we can literally magnify the work of one person into essentially a team. And the capability it's going to provide, Sarah, is she's going to be able to do data analysis. She's going to be able to create maps and tables and graphs very quickly. She will be able to create 3D graphics showing an existing condition and then showing what that area might look like maxed out to the fullest zoning potential. It's for quick digestion of the committee and council. Pretty exciting stuff, pretty amazing stuff. We're very excited. So we're getting some proposals on that. I'm going to put it in the CIP, and hopefully we can get that done.
So does she need some training on it then? Is that included? Or?
It's part of my degree that I have. So
okay. And she's done so far. She can.
Yeah, okay. Right. And they do offer some training to get, and they offer some setup to so she's off running from the get-go.
Would that be a benefit for engineering too, then?
Yes, we're actually going to copy them on the proposal and see what they think. Or maybe there's some things we're missing we might want to add. And so, we also did the National Flood Insurance Program. We got that through. We did the correction on the two abatements. So the auditor's happy, state auditor. Yeah, there's a variety of things from soup to nuts, but overall, I think it was a pretty good year. So, that.
So, have you heard any pluses or minuses for the flood insurance program from anyone?
No, haven't heard a thing.
I haven't either.
When it will impact anybody, it's going to be a very small group of people that have some floodplain going across their what would be their rear yards towards the lake. And so when we do, it'll probably be very infrequent. And I truly think that those homes are already built out. If anything, it's an administrative thing. They just need to get a LOMA, a letter of map amendment, to get themselves out. So, yeah, I don't think it's a big deal.
Any new projects?
Buildings?
I see McDonald's there.
Right.
Renovating? Mm-hmm. They're not that old.
All the fast food restaurants are keeping up with the Joneses. You know, one does something and the other has to do something. We did have a group come in to meet with us to talk about sites. They were interested in the RCA building. for some senior co-ops or senior rental. They were also interested in a couple other sites. I did mention to them that the state fairgrounds is open to offers.
The county?
Yep. Yeah, they may do a land trade, or they may do something where you build our buildings on our new site and you can have that land, sort of a trade. But so that's a once-in-a-lifetime property. It's surrounded by water on three sides.
Yeah. Dunnex had asked that 15, 20 years ago to do
that,
and they rejected them.
Oh, they did. I think they're more open to the idea now. And I mentioned that to them also. And it was kind of funny that the person actually has done a lot of HUD projects, so we knew. We had shared acquaintances. But that's probably the biggest one that came through. And Aaron Leaf? Yeah. Aaron has a number of things in the pipeline they can't talk about. He always has a few things, a few irons in the fire.
No new stores coming?
Well, yes. Next door to Kohl's, there is a...
In the mall,
a prospective tenant. But they're probably only going to take half of that half a space, so a quarter of the former Kmart. I think that's about it.
That's all we can talk about right now.
You know where Jake's is at? Talk about McDonald's and other places.
Oh, I saw them putting their storefront
on. All right. People are chomping at the bit for their pizza.
Yeah. That's where we all are.
You're not putting pizza in, are you?
No. All right.
Anything else? No? Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All right, we're adjourned. Thanks. Right,
thank you.
We're going to do the arts, I mean.
So the arts.